This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. The United States is not just a phrase. The country stretches across six time zones, from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, or whatever. The British settled some parts, the Dutch, Spanish, and French some others. But although we once fought a bloody civil war, North against South, over the issue of slavery, for more than a century, most regional rivalries in the United States have been over football games or who makes the best pizza. Americans can be born in New Jersey, but move to California, then wind up in Florida, or the other way around, retaining regional accents and tastes, but living in one nation. In a new book, Simon Winchester depicts some of the men and the inventions, treks, and enterprises, from the Transcontinental Railroad to Morse code, the Erie Canal to the Internet, that helped make the United States whole. His new book, The Men Who United the States, America's Explorers, Inventors, Eccentrics, and Mavericks, and the Creation of One Nation Indivisible. Simon Winchester joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Scott.
Does it take someone who was born an Englishman to recognize how unusual it is for a country this big to be tied together?
Well, I think our experience in Europe shows how very difficult it is for a polyglot peoples to be welded into one. So it is, to me, quite remarkable that a nation full of as many peoples and ethnic varieties and languages and religious affiliations can nonetheless call itself united.
Let me ask you about some of the sometimes to me less well-known chapters. I have a fondness for the Chicago Sanitary District Canal. Tell us about that, if we could. And this is an important part of what made America.
It is an important part. All Chicago's sewage, and I don't want to put people off their breakfasts here, but all the sewage would sweep through central Chicago out into the lake. And, of course, on a hot day, the effluent, it was a ghastly smell. And so there were numerous pleas from the citizens of Chicago said, let's get the sewage out and send it to the west and to where people don't care about it. And so they did build, first of all, the Illinois and Michigan Canal. And then finally, they took it upon themselves, this engineer called Isham Randolph, to build an almighty canal to serve the dual purpose of sending the sewage out to the west, and but also to allow ocean-going ships. And for a substantial period of time, ships would be able to come from Duluth through Lake Superior, down Lake Michigan, and then turn right, go through Chicago, and ultimately join the Mississippi River and go down to the Gulf. Mm.
I love the chapter, too, about what was called by a few people the Wire Rope Express.
Yes, that was the name given by Native Americans to this peculiar phenomenon of a copper or metal wire suspended between poles. Well, that really, with Samuel Morse's telegraph that allowed the transmission of information from one corner of America to the other in seconds, changed everything. And of course, it led the way to the telephone and radio and television and of course, to the Internet.
And the highways. I want to ask you about, I guess it was called the Great Diagonal Way. A lot of people over the years have credited President Eisenhower. No doubt he played a role, but you say, in fact, it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt who drew lines across a map.
It is true that this remarkable, curmudgeonly man, Thomas MacDonald, who was the chief of the Bureau of Roads, was called into the Oval Office by FDR, who unrolled an enormous map and drew with a chinagraph pencil three lines east and west, five lines north and south, and said to MacDonald, build me a road system along those lines. But it was actually Eisenhower who, long before that, had the first idea of the system, and that was in 1919. Just after the First World War, the American National War College was somewhat afraid that the United States might be attacked by a, quote, Asiatic enemy, and by that they presumably meant the Japanese. How do we get troops as rapidly as possible across the country by such roads or railways as exist? So they assembled a convoy 3 miles long, and they trundled off westward as fast as they could. It took 58 days for them to reach San Francisco at an average speed of 5.5 miles an hour. Clearly, if there had been an invasion, it would have succeeded by then. And the conclusion that Eisenhower came to at the end was America really needs a high-speed road system. To be united, this country needs miles and miles of concrete.
And I'm pleased to say the medium in which we're conversing has a role too, doesn't it?
Hugely important role. First of all, it was Morse, then it was voice transmissions. First radio station was above a record store, which still exists in Pasadena in Southern California. People loved it. The first proper radio station was in Madison, Wisconsin, and then the rest is history. The national conversation really got going. And the image in the 1930s, if you like, of a family grouped around the radio, listening to radio dramas, of course, Orson Welles, and that famous or infamous landing from Mars was one of the more frightening aspects of it. But it really was a unifying phenomenon. I mean, when I first hitchhiked across this country in 1962, I met Johnny Carson. I mean, it's one of the things that I'll never forget, of course, and it was only recently that it occurred to me that Johnny Carson is the kind of figure who, in his own way, his entertaining way, brought America together late at night.
A lot of what you describe in this book is private enterprise that was at least made possible by inducements from the government or sometimes outright government programs. Do you have any reflection on the shutdown?
Well, just before I reflect on the shutdown, there's an irony I think I want to mention, which is that the first place in America to get electricity, courtesy of FDR, out in the sticks, was in Western Ohio, the 8th Congressional District, which is the district today represented by John Boehner. So, I mean, John Boehner, I don't want to get into a political fight here, is an archetype of against big government. And yet the district he represents benefited hugely from big and wise government in the 1930s. So today, I mean, it's monstrous to me that the national parks are closed. The national park, another great unifying feature of this country. Hayden, geologist who discovered effectively Yellowstone, Powell, who effectively discovered the Grand Canyon, they would be spinning in their graves if they thought that America was being deprived access to these parks because of a somewhat trivial political row in Washington, D.C.
Simon Winchester, his new book, The Men Who United the States, America's Explorers, Inventors, Eccentrics, and Mavericks, and the Creation of One Nation, Indivisible. Thanks so much for being with us, Simon.
Thank you, Scott.